If you're looking for a new way to support the podcast, check out W.GG, an energy supplement company trying to make a difference. There, you can use code SIDEMISSION for 10% off your order. Thank you to W for sponsoring this episode, and we hope you enjoy.
Welcome in to the newest episode of Side Mission. I, like always, am your host, Rusty Ellis, joined by the boys, Kyle Lynch and Matt Beck. And it is time for our fifth annual Side Mission Game of the Year episode. This year, it looks a little bit different because instead of a top 10, we're doing a top 15 because this year was just damn stacked with great games across the board. Boys, I don't want this episode to be too long, but I am curious. I'm curious for both of you to hear how you're because you do a top 15 and you both told me the bottom of your list was tough, is what I heard from both of you, is that you're looking at a few games for a couple spots there at the very end. I'm curious if there was a game for either of you that nearly made it onto your list that didn't make it that you want to talk about a little bit now. Kyle, you go ahead and go first.
Man, there were a few games, but if I had to pick one, it's going to be Oblivion Remastered. I didn't choose it because they called it a remaster, and even though I think that they did enough work on that game to have been considered a remake, I couldn't put it on the list. But it was incredible. I played it. I platinumed it. I plan on going back to do the DLC because I never got to do that when I was younger. But what an incredible game.
Matt, what about you?
So a game that just barely missed my list would be Doom the Dark Ages. Felt like, like it came out in the middle of the year.
I say that like I haven't seen the list. I'm sorry.
it was Doom through and through. Like I loved, you know, I love the gunplay. I love the introduction, like the setting, this medieval times and hell type of thing. I love the weapons with the shield. I thought that was fantastic. It's just when I look back at it, it's Doom. It just didn't really stick out. I still feel like Doom 2016 was still better. I never did play Doom Eternal. I will eventually go back and play that. I just, you know, there's just a lot of high moments in Doom Dark Ages, but unfortunately it was outdone by more lower moments, especially when it came to the story.
Yeah, I will go ahead and say that Doom the Dark Ages made my list, but it was very, very low. It was very low on the list. It did not make it nearly as high as I thought it would. The one that almost made it onto my list, and the only reason it didn't is because I haven't played enough of it to fully warrant, I think, putting it on my list. And there are going to be people that hear this, and I'm going to go ahead and tell y'all, there are going to be some spicy moments on today's episode. There are going to be some spicy, spicy moments and some spicy gaming takes that you hear on today's episode. So you might as well buckle up. But for me, it was Hades 2. I just started playing it recently, and I love it. I think it's amazing. I see why it was a Game of the Year finalist, but I didn't put enough time in on it for me to justify putting it in when I just started playing it. I didn't want to just put it in when I'd only played, you know, an hour and a half or so on it. So, but it's a really, really good roguelike. It absolutely improves on the first. The first one was really good, but Hades 2, that's a banger of a game. And I do wish I had started playing it earlier, because I'm not going to lie, boys, it might've cracked my top five otherwise. It is really, really freaking good. Now, on to everybody's favorite part of the show. And this is the games that received votes but did not make the list. So, as you can imagine, doing a top 15, this part of the list is very, very intriguing, because I finally we see a lot of like what almost made the list and where a lot of these games rank ultimately is kind of why they didn't make the list. So, we had three games that only got 1 point apiece. And those games were, and as you can imagine, they were the 15th ranked game on each of our lists. From Kyle's list, it was SpongeBob SquarePants, Titans of the Tide. From Matt's list, it was Avowed. And from my list, it was Daemon X Machina, Titanic Scion. Followed by that were games that got 2 points. Now, forgive me, this is going to seem weird because there's four of these games, because Matt, for some reason, could not remember if it was a top 15 or a top 16. I don't know where, I don't know where he got 16 from, but because that was never said. But I then noticed when he sent me his list that he forgot to put a 14. So I told him, hey, you know you didn't put a 14, right? Well, he didn't respond right away. So I said, you know what? I'm just going to count his list with the 15 that he's got. I got halfway through that, and he sent me a 14. So now there is an extra game. It didn't change anything in the rankings above. Just want to make sure that's very clear. No game was changed because of that. But there are four games that got 2 points, and those games are Angerfoot, Ghost of Yote, Metroid Prime 4 Beyond, and Metal Gear Delta. So a couple heavy hitters on that list. Again, a lot of people love Ghost of Yote, and a lot of people even, I think a lot of people also enjoy Metal Gear Delta and Metroid Prime 4. So a couple really big games there. Then with 4 points, we have 3 games left in this category. With 4 points, Assassin's Creed Shadows. I really thought when I first played that game that it might make the list. I was really surprised by that. How about this for a little bit of side mission history? Have we ever had a PC game on these lists? I don't think so, because with 5 points, we also had Peak on this part of the list. I don't think we've ever had a PC game. So, Kyle, there you go. You got a little bit of representation there with Peak.
Hell yeah.
I actually thought that Matt might put that on his list as well. I was a little surprised when he didn't. And then finally, our last one, the one that was the closest to making it on the list with 6 points, was Pac-Man World 2 Repack.
Yeah, boy.
So, you both know your list. You know what games you put on your list, and you know what games are left. That means there are some really, really interesting games that are left on this list. So, we're going to do it a little bit different than normal for 15 to 11. We're going to go through those all in one reveal. We'll talk about it for a little bit. We'll do the top 10 like normal. That sound good to everybody?
Yeah.
All right, I didn't give a shit if you thought it wasn't a good idea, because we're going to do it that way anyways. So, here we go. So, in 15th on the list with 8 points, Chronos New Dawn. In 14th place with 9 points, Ninja Gaiden 4. In 13th place with 9 points, but it got, I think, a little bit of a tie break from being on more lists. Actually, wait a minute. I don't know if I ever did a tie break for that one. Wait a minute. Hold on. Did I do a tie break for this one? Leave us live. We're good. We're going to figure this out on air. All right, Matt, I'm thinking of a number 1 to 1 through 10. What am I thinking of?
6.
What about you, Kyle? What am I thinking of? Unfortunately, it was 9 because that was the amount of points they got. So the tiebreak works out. So here we go. So at number 14 place was Ninja Gaiden 4. 13th is Hyrule Warriors Age of Imprisonment. Don't worry. There's no more tiebreaks until we get to the top 10, and that one got figured out. So forgive me there. We have to have a little bit of fun on camera, though. Or not on camera. Jesus Christ, I'm tired. Anyways, in 12th place, a game that should feel fairly familiar because Matt just mentioned it, Doom the Dark Ages with 10 points. And in 11th place, and quite possibly the most interesting game on the list, because we did not review it, Ark Raiders with 11 points. So just so we're clear, 15 was Chronos New Dawn, 14 was Ninja Gaiden 4, 13 Hyrule Warriors Age of Imprisonment, 12 Doom the Dark Ages, 11th Ark Raiders. Kyle, you put Ark Raiders in your top 5. Tell me a little bit about why.
Dude, all these games were like action games. That's funny.
They really are.
dude, this one was honestly a late entry. This game came out a few months ago, and it, I think, has been one of the best times that I've had in a multiplayer game. Now, I will say that they have an issue figuring out the multiplayer when you're playing in a squad, like duos or trios. It tends to put you in a lot more PvP, whereas solos, this is a completely different game. If you're playing solos, I go in and I find people who are just like, you know, trying to help other people do missions, or they'll even drop you blueprints, or they'll help you fight, you know, the matriarch or the queen. And it's very refreshing, I think, to play a game, a multiplayer game, that I think is really outside of my genre. I'm not an extraction shooter player. I don't play Tarkov. I don't play, you know, Helldivers, really. I played it for a while when it came out, but this isn't my kind of game, and I think that this has just sucked me in because the solo play community is so different, and nobody tries to PvP. Everybody is just kind of there to help each other. It's a lot of fun, I think, going into a game and taking down big enemies with, like, a bunch of random-ass people who could turn on you and try to kill you, but instead everybody's just kind of got that underlying trust of we're all going to go in, loot, and extract. I don't know. I think that this game, it's got a little bit of controversies with it online, but it is one of the best multiplayer games that I think I've played all year.
Hey, fair, because I mean, we always talk about wanting more multiplayer games to play, and that is one that we absolutely need to start playing as a group. So I get it entirely. And the fact that it made your top five, I thought really spoke volumes for how good the game was. Matt, we just got done talking about Metroid Prime 4 Beyond and about how good of a first 6 months this has been for the Nintendo Switch 2. Obviously, 15 to 11, only one Switch 2 game on the list so far. But Hyrule Warriors Age of Imprisonment, I think the fact that a Warriors game made it onto our list, I think it's very impressive. I think it's only the second Warriors game ever to make it onto our list. So that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. I'm actually very happy to hear that, because just the vast amount of improvement that Age of Imprisonment had over
Age of Calamity.
Like, they went they definitely did a lot better on it. Not just the fact that, you know, one of my, you know, as Kyle's going to hate to hear me say this, I think that the Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom Zelda games are some of the best, not just Zelda games, but some of the best video games ever made. And that's saying a lot, because I have been gaming since the 90s.
And Kyle, if you want to go ahead and kick him off the podcast, you can.
I love the setting. I love the fact that we get to experience Zelda's story during the events of Tears of the Kingdom, where you play as Link. But here we get to see the rise of Ganondorf when he first meets, you know, King Rauru, the betrayal when, you know, he kills Rauru's wife, and then the events that unfold that lead up to, you know, what Zelda had to do in the past in order to come back and make sure that Link has the Master Sword after it was destroyed in Tears of the Kingdom. The combat here is great. I love the fact that they have these sync attacks between the characters. I believe one of my only complaints, and we talked about that in the podcast, was I just feel like a lot of the characters in this game are just a bunch of throwaways, just like Gorons and Zoras, like, just, you know, hey, I don't know who you are, but I recognize your race and you're fun to play as, so that's awesome.
Oh my gosh. Okay, well, that's one way to say it.
Well, oh my god. But yeah, the battles are so much better. The frame rate has been fixed. Like, I didn't have any issues with like, you know, any kind of frame rate dips. It runs at a beautiful 60 most of the time. The voice acting, I think, is really well done. I love the use of the gear from Tears of the Kingdom. I like the way that the map layout is. You're taking over territories. Just, this game has so much to offer, especially if you're a Zelda fan.
I would agree. And that's why it made it pretty high enough onto my list for it to make it onto here. So I do think it was a great year for the Nintendo Switch 2, a great 6 months, I should say. And I do think the rest of this list will reflect that. Now, getting into the top 10, and this is where we'll take our time a little bit more. Not getting spicy just yet, but a game that at number 10, I think a game that Matt, we both expected fully to be on this list when we played it earlier this year. It's my personal favorite entry into this franchise, and I do think that it's a game that will get me to play the next one as well. And that was Monster Hunter Wilds. It came in with 15 points. And it's a game that I still want to go back and platinum, a game that I think that the introduction of the weak point mechanic, where you could actually deal extra damage to a monster's weak point after you deal enough damage over time, I think that's great. And I do think the variety of weapons as well is part of what makes this combat so much fun. Matt, why did this game land so high for you?
So it came to ranking the games, I don't really just rank them off of the quality of the game. I rank them off the rank them off of the impact that they have on me. And you and I play this game a lot. Now, the story is not something that I'll really bring up because, you know, it is what it is. It's Monster Hunter. It's what you can do. But the new monsters in this game, like, I've been playing Monster Hunter since Monster Hunter 3 on the Wii. So this has been a game series that I fell in love with since then. And I played pretty much almost all of, you know, the new ones that come out. And Wild sticks out just because of the fact that a lot of the new mechanics that they introduce, it's definitely to help out newcomers. Like, even if you never played a Monster Hunter game, I highly recommend Wilds, or even go back to the first one that came out, Monster Hunter World on the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. Like, those are fantastic games. I love the quality of life that they make. But the monsters themselves are just so grand, and the fights with them are so epic. Like, there's just so much to do in this game. The crafting is incredible. I love, you know, you're looking for a specific rare item, and then you just fight those monsters over and over again, which normally I would say a grind like that gets tedious and boring. But especially when you are playing with friends, and the fact that you're able to call on random people online, which makes the hunts even more, that much more fun, because you're experiencing what Monster Hunter is. It is a game where you take four people out into the world and you are taking down these giant beasts together as a community. But like I said, the best way to play this game is with friends.
Yep, I agree 100%. I think that in terms of local or playing with your friends instead of playing with strangers, I do think it's a game that lends itself to being a very, very fun one online with your friends. And I think that personally, when it comes to the monster designs, the Arkveld for me is one of my favorite mascots of a Monster Hunter game that I've ever played. The Arkveld was such a cool designed monster, and I can't love that game any more than I did. Again, it came in at number 10, which is why I feel like it shows this year was a really, really stacked year in gaming. So I said that this list is going to get very spicy. And this is where that spice really kicks in. There are going to be a lot of people that click off this episode when I say the game that came in ninth. But I am going to tell you that I take immense joy in telling you what our ninth place game is. With 16 points, so Monster Hunter Wilds damn near got put over it. In ninth place, it is Clair Obscur Expedition 33. Now, I will separate my personal bias when it comes to how the fan base of this game completely torched any enjoyment I had for the game. I will separate that for a few minutes while me and Matt discuss what made the game great. Kyle, you obviously... Oh, well, you started it at least, didn't you, Kyle? You started it relatively recently, didn't you? Okay, I thought so. So... you didn't want to play it originally because of the turn-based element, correct?
Yes.
Which is fine if that's my... I mean, not everyone is going to love turn-based. That's perfectly fine, in my opinion. What did you think about that start to the game, though?
I think I may have misjudged the game's gameplay a little. You know, I know a lot of people told me that this isn't your typical turn-based, but I don't know. I'm kind of starting to like it. I'm coming around to it. It's still not my favorite way to play, but I do find it more engaging than your typical just choose an attack and then wait for them to finish their attack and choose your attack again, you know?
It feels a lot more skill-based as compared to, like, you know, just dealing enough damage over time to out DPS your enemy. It does feel very skill-based. At least as skill-based as turn-based, I think, can be. Matt, the story is phenomenal. Obviously, I don't want to spoil any of it here. In the event that Kyle goes and plays it, I want him to be able to experience, especially the end of Act 1, I want him to be able to experience that fresh. Yeah. But I feel like the first thing you think of when it comes to this game is the performances, man. The performances are... fantastic. Jennifer English obviously won best performance at the VGAs for her performance as Mael. And this is again one of the best performances I think we've seen since the podcast was started. She is phenomenal as Mael. Ben Starr as Verso is really damn good as well. And despite the fact that I do disagree with him getting a best performance nomination for just 4 hours of work in the booth, I do think that Charlie Cox is really good as Gustav. He nails that character. Again, despite the fact that I do feel like that was a nomination spot that could have gone to somebody else, namely, I think somebody from Death Stranding 2, I think would have been, in my opinion, would have been a much better use of that nomination. But the performances in the game, Matt, are really damn good.
Oh, yeah. I remember when I was playing through the game and I hear some voices. There was one in particular that I went back to go look for, and that was trying to remember his name real fast. He does like mocap for Smeagol.
Oh yeah, Andy Serkis.
Andy Serkis, thank you. He definitely was a standout for me as
yeah, he's really good as the main villain. He's really good as well.
Like exactly. And like you said, with Ben Starr was definitely fantastic in this. Even the guy who was playing I can't remember his name. I'm sorry, it's been so long.
Monoko.
Since I played the game.
Monoko.
Yes, thank you. Yes,
I remember like, enough. It's been a while since we played the game.
Yes, thank you. I feel bad that I'm having such a hard time remembering. It's just been such a stacked year of games in my brain. It's been one of those types of years. But outside of the cast, I think one of the standouts for me in this game is the art direction is gorgeous. The music is beautiful. Like, I don't listen to a lot of French music, but when this game came out, I was listening to the soundtrack on Spotify.
Yeah.
Here was a great song. Alicia was a fantastic song. But for me, I played a lot of JRPGs. I played a lot of RPGs in general. And I'm very much used to the type of combat that this kind of game uses. It's very much like how Persona is, and even there was a game that came out last year that was like this as well. But there's so much deep mechanics that goes into the combat. Like, I love being able to jump over attacks. I love the parry system in this game. The skill tree is really well done. Like, you can literally make Mael overpower to the point where she could take down just about any character, like any boss in this game.
Yes. And it's I think that was one of my favorite things of Mael.
Yeah, there's a lot of things in this game that I completely understand why it's winning Game of the Year awards. I absolutely do. It's just like with what you said, unfortunately, the fandom has just been one of those things for me that has been a turn off in the game. Like, I can't stand it when you go online and games like Donkey Kong Bonanza get crapped on because it's not Expedition 33. But this game
you can
amazing.
Say get shit on because that's what it was. You can say get shit on. That's fine. You can say that. I mean, here's the thing, and I want to say this in terms of criticism for the actual game, because there are going to be people that hear this and go, "Oh, well, you're blaming the game for something that." You know, the fan base did, and it's not anything to do with the game. I'm like, no, it actually does have something to do with the game, though, because it has everything to do also with the Game Awards itself. And again, we may do a full episode on this, but I saw a tweet that said this is a great year for variety in gaming. You would have had no idea about that if you watched the fuck-ass Game Awards. You would have had no idea because you would have thought Expedition was the only game that came out. An issue that I have within the game itself, it 100% overstays its welcome.
Yes.
At the end of Act 2, the game should have ended.
Yeah, the third act gets a little messy.
It goes on for another 8 to 10 hours, depending on all the content that you do, and it's very messy. It's very, very messy. Now, the fan base, you're just as much to blame as for this, because I got tired of seeing why play this when Expedition exists. I got tired of seeing that. The first time you say that, okay, haha, it's a funny joke, you love the game, cool. But it was every major release that came out after April ended. After the beginning of May, it was every single game that came out, why play this if Expedition exists? And I'm sorry, but Expedition 33 is also a niche game, and it's time for us to just own that. Not many people are going to love turn-based games, and JRPGs don't resonate with everybody, and that's perfectly fine. The game is amazing, and I hope that their next game is just as brilliant, if not better. But there's a part of me, and I'm thinking, Matt and you, Kyle, you both feel the same, there's a little bit of Expedition 33 fatigue. There's a little bit of fatigue with it. We're tired of pretending that it was the only game that came out this year. Now, if you leave because of the next couple of games on this list, Objectively, I get it. Objectively, I get it. Because the next three games on this list are not going to make you feel any better about where Expedition placed. Because Expedition tied with something. It tied with something. But the difference is, because Kyle put this game on his list, this game ended up placing above Expedition. And I can't believe I'm about to say it. Coming in at 8, it is Kirby Air Riders.
Yeah! Get bodied! Number 9.
So dumb. Kirby Air Riders placed above Expedition on our list. And I'm going to go ahead and give you a spoiler alert. This and the next two spots, we're going to be talking a lot about Nintendo. We're going to be talking a lot about Nintendo over these next couple of lists. But Kirby Air Riders, a game that we just recently reviewed. Hopefully that episode is up by now. I know that I've been a little behind on editing episodes, but hopefully that's up by now. But Kyle, this was a game that we talked and we said a lot of really good things about. We said if you can get used to the speed of this game, this is a game that is a blast to play with friends. Like, in terms of a party game, this is your next big banger right here.
Absolutely. This game, I think, it impressed me a lot. Now, if you didn't play the original, like I said on the episode, you know, I don't know how much you're going to love it. But me personally, and for the fans of Kirby Air Ride, this was everything that I have wanted since the GameCube era. If it wasn't going to be a remake of the original, give me a sequel. And it's got its critiques, it's got its issues. But for me personally, I'm very, very happy with it. It's just so much fun to load up and play a few games with the boys. I think the addition of the paddock, where you can just like walk around and, you know, actually interact with other characters and stuff, is really interesting and cool. It's overall a great game, I think, and I'm very, very satisfied with it.
Yeah, I do agree, Kyle. I think that this is a game that, especially with what comes out post-launch, I'm really interested to see what they do with this game. If they add more stuff, especially with the progression system and how you unlock certain things, I think this is a game that's going to keep people coming back for, I think, quite a while. I think at the very least for a few months, people are going to come back to this game repeatedly just to progress more, you know, to play more City Trial with their friends. I do think a lot of people are going to come back to this game. And I do think that if they put out steady content for it after launch, I think there's a chance this game really does grow in popularity over time, especially. Now, I told you that had 16 points, a little bit of a jump from 8 to 7, because 7th place had 21 points. And I would be lying to you if I said that the recent DLC release for this game did not jump it up a few spots on my list, because it absolutely did. Because coming in at number 7, get ready to get mad, haters out there, it is Pokemon Legends ZA with 21 points. So Pokemon Legends also finished above Expedition 33. I'm going to keep bragging about that, and I will brag when we get to number 6 as well that finished above it. Now, Kyle, when we get to number 6, you're going to brag about something else. Spoiler alert. But I digress. Matt, this was a game that I think you and I both loved. We raved about it when we reviewed it. We said, hey, Pokemon Legends Arceus was a really good first draft. A really, really good first draft. But this is what the Legends games should be, and it gives me a lot of hope for future Legends games. This game was really addicting from the word go.
Oh, yes. Yes. This, when they announced this game last year, I believe, I was so excited to finally get to go back to Kalos, even though you don't technically get to go through the region. It's just more so like it's just Lumio City, which is fine. You know, not every Pokemon game is going to be this open world type of game. Like, you know how Legends Arceus did it, or Scarlet and Violet. So it was kind of nice that we just kind of did something a little bit more simple here. But I definitely love the new mechanics that they introduced into here. You know, there's no debate that, you know, I've played every Pokemon game generation, but the battle system in this game is my all-time favorite with this real-time attacks. You don't even run, you don't run out of PP for your attacks. They just have these charge timers, you know, the bigger the attack. Like, so say for something like Scratch would take a couple of seconds to refresh, but something like Hydro Pump would take longer. Bringing back Mega Evolutions was one of my favorite things, because when they introduced that way back in X and Y, I fell in love with that system. It was such a bummer when they got rid of it. And I didn't think we'd ever see it again, knowing how Game Freak tends to forget things in the past. But they brought back Mega Evolution in a big way. The Rogue Battles with the Rogue Mega Evolution Pokemon were a lot of fun. They had, you know, a difficulty curve there, which I thought was, you know, it was really well balanced. If you know Pokemon and you know weaknesses and all of that, like, you'll go into it no issues. But the story here, I think, is what surprised me. You know, they brought back Emma, which, if you know, that's Looker's, you know, apprentice. They brought back, you know, for me, one of the biggest ones was bringing back, you know, AZ, which, you know, he had a story, a part in the story of X and Y. But after that, it was like, you know, really nothing. So seeing a continuation of AZ story. And also, you know, bringing back other, you know, characters from Team Flare, such as Mabel, even getting a, you know, a look at Lysander. I like they did a really good job on the story here. But with me, like I said, it's the combat. I even like the supporting characters. Like, a lot of them are fantastic. You know, there really wasn't anything more that I could have asked for. I still haven't experienced the DLC for me personally. I've watched you play it. I love what I saw. It definitely expanded on, you know, what Legends EA did. This is exactly what I wanted out of, you know, a new Pokemon game. I'm super excited for Generation 10 next year. I would love it if they did decide to keep this battle mechanics, but I know it's probably just going to go back to turn-based, which is fine. But like, the fact that we have the mainline games and then these Legends games that are considered mainline coexist, I think is perfect.
Yeah, I think what I liked was, like, this was a game that finally, in the Pokemon universe, it was a game that wasn't afraid to reference events from other games. And it makes everything feel very, very connected now. Like, this represented events from Hisui, from Pokemon Legends Arceus. It referenced the Alola region. It referenced the Hoenn region. It referenced Sinnoh. It referenced, obviously, the events in X and Y. And this game almost serves as a sequel to those games rather than just a standalone game with no ties whatsoever. So it's a sequel almost to X and Y more than it is to Pokemon Legends Arceus. So it's really, really interesting, especially when you consider that shithead Volo gave his clothes to the museum. I still hate that dude. I will never let that go. I hate Volo. He's a piece of shit. But nonetheless, I do think that, especially with the release of Mega Dimensions as well, I do think that this, we've seen, I think, the best of what this game can be. And I'm hoping that the next Legends game they do, they add voice acting at least a little bit, because that is the only real complaint I really had from this game. Is, for as crucial as the story is, it feels like the lack of voice acting really hurts it a little bit. If they fix that and they add a little bit, I'm not saying it needs to be the entire game, but just important cutscenes having voice acting would be nice. You do that, and I think the next game could be really considered to be one of the greatest Pokemon games of all time. As it stands, I think this is a top five Pokemon game of all time, and I stand on that hill. Now, number six, the last entry outside the top five, which you're both going to have very, very interesting reactions to, because you know what games are left. Coming in at number six with 25 points, it is Mario Kart World. Meaning that, yes, Sonic Racing Cross Worlds is higher on this list than Mario Kart World. Kyle, you may have your moment to celebrate.
I just want to take this moment to thank God, to thank Sega, to thank everyone with a brain. We all knew.
So me and you.
We all knew that it was snubbed at the Game Awards. Nobody said that Mario Kart World was better than Sonic. I'm telling you. Listen, Mario Kart World was a fantastic game, and there are some innovations that they made to the racing genre that I would love to see implemented in any other game. However, in terms of gameplay, in terms of visuals, in terms of my autism, we are going to shill for Sonic every time. I have never been more proud to be a Sonic fan after being ridiculed and made fun of throughout the entirety of my childhood for liking that trash franchise. It finally got good. And man, I never thought I would see the day where, I don't care, look, it's a racing game, whatever, a Sonic game finally beat Mario. That has never happened. I'm taking it.
fuck you, Mario.
You know, it's so funny because Kyle right now is the meme of the guy celebrating and he's in like sixth place on the podium.
Literally. Won zero right awards now at the Game Awards.
But Mario Kart World is our number sixth game. And listen, I think despite the jokes, I loved Mario Kart World a lot. I love the online. I love Knockout Tour. I think this was maybe the perfect launch game for the Switch 2 because everybody can play Mario Kart. Everybody can play this game and enjoy it. And is it a perfect game? No. Is it worth $80? Probably not, but none of us got it for that. We got it for $50, so suck it. but I do think that the amount of times we've played it together and had fun and you know, laughed and just, again, we had fun while playing it. That's the optimal word, is that word fun. That's what games are supposed to be. And Matt, I don't know if there are many games, at least on the list that's left, I don't know if there's many games outside of Sonic that topped this game when it came to fun factor.
Nope, not for me. Not me personally, especially because Mario Kart is just the pure... Shut up, Kyle. It's just the pure best kart racer that there is. It has been around for so long. And each iteration, you know, improves upon the previous one. A lot of people will continue to say that Mario Kart 8 Deluxe was better. I disagree. The only complaint that I have about this game is I do wish that we would hear more about updates from Nintendo. Like, they have gradually been improving, you know, the game itself. They fix a lot of issues that, you know, players have been, you know, talking about online as far as just, you know, some of the the intermissions, you know, where it's just you're just driving straight, not doing anything. They, you know, improved on that. They improved on unlocking characters. But that's another part where my problem lies, is I love the fact that, you know, each character has, you know, a bunch of different, you know, outfits. I would have liked to see more individual, you know, characters, because you look back at previous Mario Karts, you see characters like Petey Piranha or the Koopalings. And here, it's just like, it's just the main cast of Mario, and then you have, you know, Bowser's minions as all his racers. But, like, I would love to see, you know, expansion with, you know, Donkey Kong characters, because they are part of the Mario universe. The online itself is a lot of fun. Knockout Tour, like Rusty said, was a lot of fun. Like, we had a lot of moments playing that game that I look back at, and they're going to be the most memorable gaming moments for me this year. But that's when it comes to Mario Kart, it is exactly what you said. It is fun. It is frustrating at times. Like, introducing this game, introducing, like, being able to do tricks on, you know, grinding on rails, riding on the walls. You could do some crazy stuff in this game. But it's going to be one of those games that I feel like is going to last to the Switch 2 generation. So I don't think we'll get another Mario Kart till the next Nintendo console. So just keep further supporting it with new content, new modes, new characters, and it'll continue to be my favorite.
Yeah, I do think that this is a game that you can build on if you're Nintendo for the next 6 or 7 years. Anyways, I'm kidding. I hate myself. But I do think this is a game that you can, for this generation, you can absolutely build on this game. I think, for example, like, think about all the characters that were in Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, like Link. I mean, I think you can add characters like Link, like Samus, like, you know, I think that Animal Crossing, like, add other characters in, I think, over time, that are Nintendo properties, and I think that people will continue coming back to this game just to play as them. I think it'd be a lot of fun. So, diving into the top five, we're not even going to waste any time with the rivalry. With 31 points, 6 points ahead of Mario Kart World, number five was Sonic Racing Cross Worlds. So, Kyle, now you can talk a little bit more about Sonic.
Man, I just gotta say that this game has perfected the kart racing genre. Well, I appreciate other games trying to do the whole transforming thing. I never felt like anything after Sonic Racing All-Stars Transformed did it better. And this was the first game that I feel like when you're doing the transformation, when you're flying, when you're driving, when, you know, you're in the water, there it's not just visual. There are different movesets. There's different ways to boost. I much more prefer being in the water. I would actually take an entire water track. I think that'd be a lot of fun
over flying or driving. I'm pretty sure some people prefer the flying because there's different ways that you can maneuver in the air with the boost. I'm just not good at that. But in other games, it's just, oh, well, you're just flying now. At the same speed, you can still do it. Actually, I don't think in other games you can drift in the air or in the water. It's really just, it's visuals. And you know, sometimes being in the water can, you know, completely change the game. I can speed up really fast. And you get me in the air, I'm screwed. But I like that because it feels like the transformations are different. The item selection is just absolutely nuts. It's crazy. And they're continuously adding more stuff. I love how they're celebrating pretty much a lot of different video games, especially a lot of platformers lately. Never-ending content is pretty much the name of this game. And if, you know, like with Mario Kart World, if you continuously update this game with more content, with more tracks, more characters, people keep coming back, especially with these recognizable characters from very beloved franchises.
Well, and the festivals as well. The festivals, I think, are some of the best part of this. I think that those have added a lot of value to the online and have gotten many hours out of the game that I think I might not have given it otherwise. So I think the festivals are big. I think you continue doing that, it's great. You continue adding new characters, it's even better. And I fully believe that Sega, especially with how Sonic has kind of risen in popularity once again over the last couple of years, both with the movies and with games like Sonic Frontiers, Superstars, and now Sonic Racing Cross Worlds, I do think that this is a great time for Sega to really take advantage and really support this game, because it had been a while since I'd heard about really anything Sonic related up until the last couple of years, especially with Sonic 4 looming on the horizon. So I think that if there was ever a time for them to really go all in on a Sonic game, it is this one. And as it stands right now, if you had told me back several months ago that Sonic Racing Crossroads would be in our top five, I would have never believed it before launch. We thought it looked great, and it ended up being spectacular. So going from that, Sonic Racing Crossroads at 31 points. I want to go ahead and give you an idea of how close this list actually was. Number one had 44 points. So it really wasn't, that like much of a blowout like it may normally sometimes be. But number four is a game that I hope we spend a good amount of time on, because this is a game that I felt really got disrespected at the Game Awards. And I do not know why. I know why. It's because it came out earlier in the year. But to me, that's not a good enough answer. I don't care what anyone says. Our fourth place game, Split Fiction, is the best co-op game that's ever been released. I do not care what the argument is. Haze Light knocked it out of the park, and Split Fiction absolutely deserved better recognition at the Game Awards than what it got. Matt, you obviously played a lot of the game with your girlfriend. Yep. And I think I would love to have been a fly on the wall for those sessions. Because I can just imagine you two yelling at each other. But this game, it's just, it goes back to having fun, but there's so much heart in this game. There's so much soul in this game that it's impossible to play the game and not smile and not feel something. Like, it's really impressive the emotions I think this game is able to invoke.
This game honestly is a love story to video games. You can tell that the people who made this game don't just play one genre, and they don't just play one franchise. They had so many small details in there that weren't just, I mean, some of them were kind of in your face, but for the most part, there were a lot of them in it that, like, if you didn't play this game, you probably didn't really recognize. I mean, everybody recognized the bonfire, of course, but, you know, there's just a lot of little things in there that I absolutely love when developers just, you know, put stuff in there for people who pay attention to detail. This is one of those games where you should pay attention to all of the details. They even have references to some of their older games, like It Takes Two. But the way that they were able to mash so many genres into one game and make it a co-op game, run seamlessly. I mean, the performance was incredible on this game, and the gameplay just blew me away. I could not glaze this game enough, and actually, for about half of the year, this was my game of the year. Later in the year, I think there were some games that just came out a little bit better than it, but this was my game of the year very early on and for a while.
Yeah, I think that you mentioned it with the references. This is a game that's made by gamers that love gaming. And you mentioned the bonfire. I don't know if we found this in our game, but there's actually also a reference to Elden Ring as well. There's a reference to the round table hold, where you can the table with the table of lost grace. Like you can like there's a room that has that in it. It's really, really cool. But it's other references like, you know, It Takes Two or A Way Out. The Metal Gear games are referenced. Portal's referenced a couple times as well. It's the gameplay is so good, and it's all also helped by the fact that, Matt, this is a very, very heartwarming story. It's a story yes. about grief and loss and how different people process and how people handle it. It's a story about guilt to an extent. It's a story about anger. And I just feel like it's all tied together very well by the two lead characters in Mio and Zoe. I feel like, again, if you were looking for a best performance nod that wasn't Charlie Cox, I would have given it to either of the voice actresses that played them, because I thought that they were two very, very well written and expertly voice acted characters.
Yeah, their dynamic throughout the game is, I think, is what really sells the story, because, you know, they're both completely different people. They both have their own traumas, things that they're dealing with, you know, things that go into the stories that they write. And one of those things that for me in this game that I love about is how the individuality of each character, like, you know, with Zoe, she has the more fantasy setting, and then with Mio, she has the more sci-fi setting. And it all just really makes sense in the way that their stories play out. I love the fact that this game literally does not run out of any ideas. I mean, you go from playing a fairy, then you go from playing a pig that turns into a hot dog, and in order to proceed, you have to put mustard and ketchup and then pop yourself up in a bun. I love the fight in the ice castle where it's like you fight what was like a kitten?
A giant cat, like, yeah.
Exactly, the giant cat. And then you even get to go into like this kind of Hogwarts setting where, you know, you can mix potions and do some crazy ass stuff. Like I know that me and Luna spent like at least an hour there alone just making potions and just doing crazy ass things. Like, this is a game that I know for a fact that I will replay again in the future because of just how good it is. Like, I would, you know, probably end up getting it on the Switch too myself, like how you did, and play it on there. But yeah, no, I really wish that this game had not been paid to us at the Game Awards, because I mean, the previous games from Hazelight, you know, they got awarded, but this one for some reason did not. And it's just unfortunate, because I feel like that there's just no way to top multiplayer, like, you know, couch co-op with a friend or a loved one and experience a story together. And, you know, I even think it had a great villain in Raider. Like, I think his idea was unique, where he wants to take all these people who write stories and, you know, steal their ideas. Like, he's not just your typical, you know, villain wants to take over the world. Like, he wants to take the ideas of other writers and then turn that into money. Like, that is a real life, you know, man right there who wants to use his power and his money to, you know, make even more money.
Yeah, I think that it was a very realistic villain outside of obviously the kind of the crazy way he goes about it. But it feels like very true to life, where it's like, yeah, there's probably somebody out there that runs a publishing company that would steal ideas like this from other people and would do it. It felt like a very grounded villain, all things considered. I think also the impressive part, Kyle, we talk about the last level of this game, dude, how it just changes between the two perspectives of the medieval fantasy and the futuristic, like, cyberpunk-esque feeling of Mio's stories. Like, it just jumps back and forth between them, and there's no slowdowns or anything performance-wise. This game looked and ran really, really well, and I think that's one of the most impressive parts that nobody talked about.
Yeah, the fact that, we were playing this game online. It had to run two people, you know, on the same game seamlessly for so much of this. I cannot commend them enough in an age of so many damn broken games. Wow, you guys really took your time polishing this. Thank you.
Yeah, and Split Fiction, just a phenomenal game. It's a game that at some point I would love to replay just because it's so much fun. And Kyle, we got the platinum on it on our first playthrough. So, I mean, hey, we at least got that as well. So it didn't get enough recognition at the Game Awards, but I'm glad we could give it some recognition now. Now, I don't know if this has ever happened on one of our lists, because our number three spot is really interesting, because we all voted it for number three. We all put in our number three spot with 39 points. We all put Elden Ring Night Rain. I don't think I've ever seen that before. Like, we've never had a unanimous game of the year. And I'll go ahead and tell you, we do not have a unanimous game of the year this year either. We almost did. We almost did, but we don't. But I don't think we've ever in our top three ever unanimously agreed that a game belonged in the top three in the same exact spot. But we all agreed with Elden Ring Night Rain. And Kyle, we've played a lot of this game. Me and you, you've got almost 200 hours in it. I've got over 160 hours in it now. Matt finished with like 46 hours, 46 minutes and 46 seconds in it. And since then, obviously, he's played a little bit more. But like, this is a game that, Kyle, the best way to describe it is we keep coming back to it. And that alone is a good symbol of its quality.
This game is the easiest and hardest FromSoft game there will ever be, I think. And they continuously prove that again and again with each update, with, you know, as we've seen recently with the DLC, we're having an absolute blast with that, by the way. I cannot stop playing this game. I don't know what it is. It's so damn addicting. I think that after a while, you know, you've kind of done everything in a game. You move on. You know, there's only so much you can do. And in this game, it's so unique. I mean, there are just so many different map combinations. There's so many different enemy combinations, Night Lord combinations. You know, you're never always going to have the exact same run, unless you're me and Rusty, who pulled the same seed twice the other day somehow. No idea how we did that, but it's just one that you can keep coming back to, and then you add on top of that that you can play with friends, that it's seamless co-op. I've been asking for this for a long time. Now, FromSoft games are usually co-op anyways, but this is like actual seamless co-op. Not you have to summon and, you know, you can only do it in certain areas. They knocked it out of the park with this $40 kind of project. It's not what they're known for doing. And I wish more people would have given it a chance. The people who stuck with this game understand why it's so good.
Yeah, I mean, this is addicting is a great, great word for it. Because again, it just seems like every time I think I'm done with that game, I end up playing it for 15 to 20 more hours. I end up playing it even more. And it's exactly what you said in that it can be the easiest game FromSoft's ever made. It is absolutely also one of the hardest they have ever made. We are struggling to beat the Dreglord in the DLC. And we just recently beat the Valkyries, who are the first new Night Lord that the DLC introduced. Matt, obviously, like, you haven't played this game as much as me and Kyle, but you do have the platinum like we do. Tell me, in terms of games that you've platinumed recently, how difficult was this one compared to others?
I mean, when we're comparing to other software games, from soft games, then yeah, this was a pretty fairly more, you know, easy platinum, especially when you are, you know, doing this with friends and not randoms online. I think the most difficult one that I remember is probably having a legendary item equipped into each slot. But yeah, I'm with you guys on this one. This game sticks out for me this year because of just how much fun I had with you guys on it. I mean, honestly, with me mispronouncing things, with me running off and getting lost and then ending up dying because I got out of the circle or whatever. It's made for a lot of memories. Like, this game was fantastic. I'm super excited for, you know, to see how Duskblood plays out, knowing that it's going to be another, you know, purely online game like this one is. Like, FromSoft, you know, they dipped their toes into something different, and it worked out really well for them.
Yep, I agree. I think that's the biggest thing is, again, FromSoft has gotten really experimental with Elden Ring, both base Elden Ring and now Night Rain. They have done things that are outside of their comfort zone, and they've made their games into different kinds of experiences. One's an open world that takes their formula and seamlessly transitions it to that open world setting. And this one, again, takes that formula of leveling up, losing experience on death, stuff like that. And it, instead of putting it in an open world setting, it turns it into this roguelike that I thought worked very, very well. And I think it has only gotten better and only aged gracefully as the months have moved along. Now, before we get into the top two, you both obviously know what they are. We're not like, this is not one of those years where it's like, oh, I wonder what the top two are. No, we all know exactly what the top two are. I am curious, what was each of your least favorite games you played this year?
Ooh,
that's a hard one, actually.
Yeah, because there weren't a ton of just bad games. Like, I do feel like there were a fair amount of, like, okay games, and only a handful of, like, really, really bad games. But I'm curious, like, what game do you both look at as, I'm never playing this game again? I don't care.
I mean, specifically that release this year, or just something that we played this year?
Well, you know what? Either or. Either or.
Well, I mean, I played the demo for Drag X Drive, which was terrible.
Yeah, for a couple reasons, yeah, I would
agree. For me, man, it's probably going to be Lost Soul Aside. What
thank
a
you. I'm
disappointment!
Like, I'm you both up yeah. there. I was like, thank you.
Although I won't lie, Where Winds Meet was pretty bad too.
Where Winds Meet was pretty terrible. Yeah, it was bad. Like, and is there a game that you wish we had played and reviewed? Obviously, Kyle, we've heard about Arc Raiders already. I know what my answer is to that. My answer is still Dispatch. I hate that we didn't get to play and review Dispatch.
Dispatch is my answer too.
I do want to play Dispatch. I really want to play it because I love the Telltale games, and I really want to play this.
My answer is actually going to be Hell Is Us. I was very intrigued by that game. It looked like a Souls-like, you know, very inspired by the genre, but I think that, you know, I played the demo and it just stuck out to me. I don't know what it was. It was a little bit easier than others FromSoft games, but something about the story, something about the combat was a lot of fun. I enjoyed the way the enemies, you know, played out. It was a little bit like a horror Souls, like, it was different, and I want to go back and get that game and play it. I wish we had gotten it. The amount of games that came out in that month were brutal, and we just did not have the time, I think.
We made the wrong decision with Lost Soul Aside over Hell Is Us.
Oh, we 100% did. We went, because we saw them both, and we were like, man, honestly, Lost Soul Aside looks like it might be a little bit better, and boy, were we wrong!
This might bang. It did not bang.
I was watching.
Matt, Kyle, what about you?
What? Again, I wish
you said Dispatch. That's right. You said Dispatch.
I agree with you on Dispatch just because, like, it was out of my radar, and all of a sudden, and it's all I saw online, and I saw, you know, really good things, you know, said about it. And then, you know, even my girlfriend was talking about it. I was like, you know what? Maybe I should try this out. And I really wish that we had played it and that we did cover it.
Yeah, which, to be fair, I mean, I've always said I have no problems with us playing a game or two after, you know, we do this list. Maybe a game that we missed, and maybe doing an episode in January of what have we been playing lately? Because I will tell people honestly, my favorite part, or one of my favorite parts of doing this episode, is knowing that once I edit and send this off to Kyle, we are done recording episodes for the rest of the year. That this is like our little two and a half, 3 week break where, okay, we can play whatever we want. We'll get back to it in January with actual episodes because we've been grinding hard this year. I'll give you another one that wasn't just Dispatch. I really want to play Kingdom Come Deliverance 2. I really want to play that because I have heard a lot of great things about that game in terms of how good it is as an RPG, and I would love to play it. And I mean, I hope I get it for Christmas. If my parents listen to this episode, doesn't matter because this episode comes out on Christmas. So I hope that when this episode comes out, I'll be able to tell the two of you that I got it for Christmas. So nonetheless, let's go ahead and get into our top two. Now, I do want to go ahead and say both of these games are the only two games that I played this year that I would give a 10 out of 10 to. These are the only ones that I would give a 10 out of 10 to. These are both phenomenal games. And I went back and forth personally over which one I picked. I have no problem admitting that I was the swing vote for this one. Because Kyle voted for one, Matt voted for the other, and I ended up being the swing vote. And my decision that I made last night, last night, let me go ahead and get the date real quick. On the 15th, because we're recording this on December 16th, The decision I made on the 15th is ultimately what swung this vote. So number two on our list with 43 points, it is Donkey Kong Bonanza.
Wow.
And it was close. I told you both the difference between this and first place was 1 point. It was as close as our game of the year has ever been. But I do not want Donkey Kong Bonanza finishing in second to overshadow or anything real, or say anything negative about the game, because Donkey Kong Bonanza is an incredible 3D platformer. It is an incredible experience from beginning to end. Matt, we've said the words fun a lot over the course of this top five. There is no game that came out this year that I think outside of Sonic Racing better encapsulated pure fun in gaming form than Donkey Kong Bonanza. This game was a delight to play from beginning to end. And that's not even factoring how good the DLC was.
Yeah, this was probably, you know, for me, this is my personal game of the year. This game, it touched, you know, I wouldn't say touch, but it was like reliving a part of my childhood because I grew up playing Donkey Kong Country. And a lot of the things that this game did was bring back a lot of those things. Now, a lot of people will talk about how, you know, a lot of the deciding factor for some people when it comes to this game is the nostalgia factor. And I do agree to an extent because they did bring back, you know, K. Rool, who hasn't been around since Donkey Kong 64 in such a way. But the way they brought him back was just done so big. Like, it was just this event. I wouldn't even consider it, because leading up to this game's release, they weren't talking about it. We were talking about Void Kong and, you know, Void Company, which I think that they were fantastic villains. Unfortunately, you know, Void Kong did get sidelined for K. Rool. But for me, you know, platformers is one of my favorite genres. Kyle knows that because, you know, platformers is his favorite genre too. So, you know, the level design to this game, just being able to destroy the environment was something that, you know, I hadn't seen done before. And, like, you know, this was almost considered a prequel. I mean, I guess it is a prequel to Mario Odyssey, which was before this game, which I'm still, you know, going back and forth, is Bonanza is Mario Odyssey my favorite 3D platformer. But, you know, they both do things so differently with Mario Odyssey with the power-ups. Donkey Kong Bonanza also has its own power-ups with the Bonanzas, which I love them so much because, you know, just being able to do the zebra form, the snake form, the ostrich form, like, everything is unique. It's different. Just going around all the levels, just destroying them, you know, doing side quests. Like, the level designs were absolutely crazy because you had one where it's just basically giant fast food. You had another one that takes the whole trope of an ice level, but they turn it into ice cream and desserts, which I thought was really cool. But yeah, this game definitely was just something that I'm going to remember for a very long time. The DLC is a lot of fun as well. Just going throughout the levels and destroying things and kind of like in a roguelike setting where you build up power-ups to advance and collect more gems. Like, I would definitely say that Switch 2 had a fantastic year with Mario Kart World, but this game right here is the golden jewel, is the crown jewel for me on the Switch 2, and I loved every moment of it, and I really hope I don't have to wait another 20-something years for another Donkey Kong game.
I do think that it's something to be said that as solid as a first 6 months as the Switch 2 had, this to me is their system seller alongside Mario Kart World. If you're going to get a Switch 2, get it for this game. Because you will have so much fun destroying every environment you get into, going through these levels, doing all the challenges, finding all the bananas. And then none of that to factor in either A, the excellent story that it manages to tell between DK and young Pauline, as well as the in-game content and the DLC content, which I do feel like have added a significant amount of hours back into the game, in addition to all of the completionist stuff you can do as well. I think that Nintendo games have in the past really gotten hammered for their games never dropping in price because of the amount of content they offer. I feel like this is a game that we're going to see at $70 for a long, long time. And I think even a year or two from now, the amount of content in it will justify that price tag. I don't think that there is a problem with that at all. Kyle, this was a game that we were all obsessed with when it came out. And you talked about how long you spent in that opening area just destroying everything. Brother, I think one of my favorite memories from gaming this year is watching you destroy the gold statue.
That was incredible. I destroyed every bit of it. I wanted all that gold, and boy, am I glad I did, because I needed it later on. But yeah, man, I really had such a hard time choosing between number one and number two on my list, because this game was just pure joy from beginning to end. It was so much fun. And as a platformer, you know, genre gamer, I love those. It's always going to be, you know, something that I think I love forever. And this game really, really spoke to me. I say it a lot. I went back and I tried to play Astrobot after, and I was like, wow, Donkey Kong truly innovated in the platformer sense of just freedom. Something Nintendo's done a lot, which I have to commend with the Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom, you know, games, is that they're really trying to give a lot more freedom to the player and say, kind of just have your own experience. We have a story, we have an obvious set path, but your way of traversing, your way of obtaining your goals and getting there, the journey, which ultimately is the entire point of the game, is entirely your own. And I cannot imagine a better way to satisfy a gamer than to allow them the freedom of doing it in pretty much any way they want. This game truly spoke to me as the best platformer I think I've ever played.
Yeah, I think that that's a very, very fair statement at this point to make. I think that if you are going to buy a Switch 2, you have so many great games you can buy that are exclusive to that console over the Switch 1. In addition to other games that are also on the Switch 1, but just play better on the Switch 2, like Metroid Prime 4, like Pokemon Legends ZA. But this is the crown jewel of the Nintendo Switch 2, and it likely will be as we get through the entire first full year of the Switch 2. This is going to be the game we look back on and we say, yeah, this was the game that made buying a Switch 2 100% worth it. But as always, there can only be one at the top of this list. And from one exclusive to another, I feel like this year we saw the best Nintendo exclusive that we've seen in recent memory. And at number one, I am ready to say it, I think we saw the best PlayStation exclusive that I think we've ever seen. And that is at number one for our 2025 Game of the Year. It is Death Stranding 2 on the beach. This was cinema. This was cinema. I mean, and to be fair, I always say, I do think that sometimes this list, it's really unfortunate for one of us because sometimes someone's game takes a back seat. But Matt, you did put this game at number two on your list. So it's not like you loved this game, I think, just as much as we did. You just love Donkey Kong a little bit more, which I think is very, very valid, very, very fair. But I genuinely am thinking back over the course of the PS5. I don't believe that there is a single PS5 exclusive that has ever come out that tops this game. I think from top to bottom, this is as perfect as a game gets. Like, I think the story is incredible in all the areas it needs to be. I think the characters are criminally underrated, as shown clearly by the Video Game Awards Best Performance nominations. I'm sorry, Lea Seydoux should have been a finalist for Best Performance for Fragile. She 100% should have been a finalist. As well as Norman Reedus. Troy Baker, by the way, was nominated for the wrong role, in my opinion. I'm sure he's incredible as Indiana Jones, but his performance as Higgs in this game? Generational level villain. Absolutely generational level villain. And Kyle, they did the most important thing. They made the game interesting from the start instead of forcing you to get 10 to 15 hours in before it got good. This game is a nonstop roller coaster and it's amazing beginning to end.
Yeah, I think that this game was seriously underappreciated and I understand it is niche, yes. I didn't want to take a chance on the first game, and now I feel like I missed out. After watching, you know, in the entire story online before playing the second game, I was like, damn, I really missed out on a damn good story, and I am so glad that I did not miss out on this, because what really put it over for me as my game of the year was the ending.
I don't think I'm ever gonna see an ending to a game like that ever again. There is just no words for every bit of it. The entire boss fight, the way it ends, the way the game ends. It was just, wow. I could not believe what I was seeing. It was such a spectacle. And I hope that people out there will go and give this game a chance, because it's just so unique. It's so different, and I don't think that there are other games out there like this. It's obviously not for everybody, and if it's not for you, that's fine. Watch someone, watch the story. It's worth it. I promise you, it's so worth your time to at least just experience the story in these cutscenes.
I think the really big highlight, besides anything I just mentioned, I mean, Matt, you tell me if you think differently. I don't know that I've ever seen a better looking game than this. I don't know in terms of detail, art style, down to the smallest minute pieces. I don't know that a game has ever looked as good and run as well as this game did. And we saw it on a variety of TVs. You played it on the Portal. We saw it on your OLED TV. And obviously I played most of it on my TV. That's just a 1080p non-4K TV. And across the board, the game looks and runs so flawlessly. I mean, Matt, this game is just beautiful. It's a work of art. This, when people say that video games are not art, the top two on this list are what I will point to say you are wrong when you say that.
Yeah, that was the big standout for me with Death Stranding 2, is just how it looked, how it played. I mean, everything felt so real. Like, just even when you're stepping on the sand, you see your footprints and they don't just go away, they stay there. The amount of attention that went into, you know, the details of this game, like Kojima, no one does it like him. I've never really been a big fan of his games. Like, I never really was able to get into Metal Gear Solid. I never did play Zone of the Enders. And I did start playing the first Death Stranding a while back, and I just couldn't get into it. And when I look back at it, I don't really understand what it was that didn't click with me, that Death Stranding 2 just clicked with me instantly. And then, you know, that feeling that I had in the very beginning of the game, it just lasted all the way throughout. And one thing I remember talking about in our podcast episode for this game was just a sense of community that goes into it, where, you know, you have this broken world that's very hard to access. Like, the terrain is very difficult, and you start off, you know, you're just walking to deliver these packages, but over time you get access to the vehicles, and then over time your world changes, where people are starting to build bridges or they're starting to build zip lines, and it just, you know, makes so much sense. Like, this is not a genre you're going to see ever again outside of Death Stranding, unless somebody else decides to try and one-up Kojima, which I don't think is happening.
Don't do that.
This is, yeah, don't even try to it, because if you could just get into Kojima's mind, I can't imagine what you would find. Like, he is more than just a game developer. He's a director. He is an artist. Like, I'm not going to glaze on Kojima like that, but it's just like, once every generation or so, you will find a game like this, whether if it's from him or if it's from Soft, or even if it's from like Nintendo. There's a game to me that really will define the generation as to what it was able to put out, and Death Stranding 2 is pretty much the game that's going to define the PS5 generation.
Yeah, I agree. I think that I'll end it with this, we don't talk about a lot of serious real world issues on this podcast. There's a reason we talk about gaming. We do this because we enjoy gaming. We love gaming. It's a hobby that all three of us share. But I find it very interesting on the topic of this game being as underappreciated as it was at the Game Awards, which, by the way, is an American awards show. I want to make that very, very clear with this next point that I make. I find it very interesting that the game that goes underappreciated is the one about a world where everybody is divided and everybody is cut off from each other. Everyone is disconnected. And it's a game about bringing everyone together that goes underappreciated, that goes pretty much ignored at an American award show. Just want to say, I find that very interesting. Take that as you will. Boys, that wraps up year five of Side Mission. That seems crazy. Like, I don't know about you guys, but the fact that this podcast almost didn't make it past the first episode, and here we are 5 years later doing this. I mean, that's special in my opinion. I don't know about you two, but I love that.
Dude, I cannot believe it's been 5 years, seriously, since... Man, we started and said, how fun would it be if we sat down and just recorded what we thought about a video game and then stayed up for hours on end screaming at the computer? Oh, man.
There were tears. I've always said one day we will do a behind the scenes episode where we talk about that first episode, because there is very few people are truly understanding of how close Side Mission was to never happening. Very few people understand that. But yet here we are 5 years later, and I am very, very happy that through all of the struggles, all of the issues we've had, the amount of times we've fired Matt, I'm kidding about that last word, but the amount of changes we've gone through, we've had guests. Obviously, this year we had Tom and we had Darius. We had Isaac on, I'm pretty sure, an episode earlier in the year. We've had guests in the past, like Daniel joined us in our very first full year for the Skyward Sword episode. We have had so many guests, Woody and Thacker. Thacker obviously becoming a part of it. We have had all of this change, and yet at any time it would have been very, very easy for us to give up and say we're done, and we've yet to do that. Despite how busy we've been, despite job changes, we have never once compromised on Side Mission. And I personally, I don't know about you guys, I personally am very, very proud of that. So that is going to do it for this episode of Side Mission. That is going to wrap a bow on Side Mission 2025, with our Game of the Year winner being Death Stranding 2 on the beach. For the boys, for Kyle, for Matt, I'm Rusty. Thanks for listening, and Merry Christmas.